The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. This is your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden, and on today's show, We are going to encourage the use of mulch around plants of all sizes, design a successful farm internship program, and get ready for this weekend's mushroom cultivation workshop. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building island koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kasilas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for everyone there. Thanks for Kauai Store for carrying beautiful Kauai-grown, made products, and for Anahola Stringed Instruments for making amazing instruments made of Kauai-grown stuff, and Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe for stocking just as much naturally grown food here on Kauai that they can get their hands on, too. So three great underwriters walking the talk and joining us in our celebration of the abundance of all things that grow beautifully here on the Garden Island. And today I'm very pleased to be joined in studio by a special guest. Once again, it's Tammy Davis joining us. Welcome, Tammy.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and we're excited to be spending some extended time with you this weekend at the mushroom cultivation workshop that we're getting set to announce on the show coming up soon. It's coming up this Sunday on the 7th of Feb here on the North Shore of Kauai. So we're going to get to that. We'll tell you in detail without revealing all of the secrets what people will be learning and that sort of thing. I know a lot of people have been waiting for an opportunity to not just hear about mushrooms, but to get their hands involved in the process.
Great.
So thank you for bringing that to us here on Kauai. And we're going to start as we normally do with our celestial session. But before we do that, I forgot that I did want to mention once again that we want to give so much thanks to David Kuhn for providing the beautiful dulcet tones of the native birds that we play at the beginning of the show. SoundsHawaiian.com is where you can find out more information about not just this recording, but so many of the natural world that he does throughout the island. So thank you, David, as well. And today's celestial session, we'll start with our Hawaiian moon, and today's Hawaiian moon phase is Kaloa Kulua. Kaloa Kulua rose over Kauai at 2:55 a.m. this morning. I caught first sight of her at about 4:50 when I woke up to get ready for the show this morning. She was beautiful, beautiful crescent moon. She reached her apex in the sky at 8:37 a.m., and she'll set at 2:18 p.m. this afternoon. 24% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated today. We have the new moon coming up next Monday at 4:39 a.m., and the day following that will be the first moon of the Hawaiian moon month, known as Hilo, with 2% of the moon's face visible. or will it? So it
will
turns
we see it or not?
Yes, it turns out that it is difficult to predict the whether or not the new moon, or rather the first crescent moon, is visible on any given day. It's not something that can merely be calculated, but it is based on various considerations, including the geometry of the sun, moon, and the natural horizon, the width and surface brightness of the crescent, the absorption of moonlight, and the scattering of sunlight in the Earth's atmosphere, and the physiology of human vision. So you put all those things together, and there's a high degree of uncertainty about whether or not we'll see the first crescent moon. So I'm looking forward to having a look, and I've actually finally set myself an alarm on my phone at 6:45 p.m. on Monday and then Tuesday night. I'm expecting to actually see it Tuesday. Okay. But in looking at some of the other Hawaiian moons, they are noting that Hilo moon's going to come on Monday.
This is why they had to have live people looking at the moon. I mean, that's who you trust as your eyes and your community.
Exactly right. So we'll be having a look for that. Just to finish up the Hawaiian moon readings for today, Kalua Kuulua, the second of three Kalua moons in the Emi, or diminishing Anahulu, which is one of the three Hawaiian moon weeks, the third of them. Kalua Kuulua is the 25th month of the Hawaiian lunar cycle. And planting recommendations from native planters in old Hawaii, it is a good time for planting bamboo for braiding hats. Plant plants with long stems like mai'a, banana, ko, sugarcane, vauke, the paper mulberry, and ohe, bamboo, for they will grow long, kaloa. Uala, sweet potato, and uhi will run to long vines. Hala will develop long leaves. All very useful plants, canoe plants. And that is our Hawaiian moon reading. Yes, please.
Great. For now, a biodynamic look at things, and I bet some of this will coincide. Brought to us by Robin at Heaven on Earth Starts, which is a great way to get your garden going. I just actually picked up some from her and started another community garden plot for myself. I'm so excited. So this is a descending into ascending phase this week. On Wednesday, February 3rd, and Thursday the 4th, the moon is in Scorpio, which is a water sign, and that's good for leafy plants. So look at planting your early spring greens, lettuces, chards, focusing on that kind of thing. Ascending moon phase begins then Friday, the February 5th, and Saturday the 6th, the moon is in Sagittarius, which would be a fire sign, and that is good for fruit. So that would be especially good for grafting, especially now that we're in the spring, right? The sap is running. I know just the other day was Imbolc. Was it yesterday? Imbolc is a cross-quarter day in the sort of Northern European Celtic tradition. A cross-quarter day is exactly between the spring equinox and the, winter solstice and spring equinox. We're exactly halfway in between those two. And so Imbolc was a time, at least in a temperate climate, when things would start to stir under the snow and under the ground. Here it's more subtle, but it is a time when the sap starts running more, is what they say in the Northern Hemisphere. So good time for grafting and doing cuttings. And then on Sunday and Monday, we have the moon in Capricorn, and it's an earth sign, so that's good for roots. It's a great time to plant your onions, and I know that's especially tricky this time of year. You want to get onions in the ground for Hawaii, this is the time to start. I think you can get starts probably from Robin, if you didn't get them going. That's also the new moon that you mentioned earlier. And then on Tuesday the 9th, the moon is in Aquarius, which would be an air sign. So you look at your flowering plants, making cuttings from flowering plants, doing various work with cuttings. I think that's the best recommended time. And that's what I have.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you, Robin. I saw that note on her message to us that she had sort of stars next to the very good day for cuttings and graftings on, was it Saturday?
Friday, Saturday, yeah. Moon and Sagittarius.
Friday and Saturday. So definitely thinking about that with the Community Seed and Plant Exchange coming up. There are great things to take as cuttings that you just bring, but some things that are maybe a bit trickier that you would want to root out first, it would be a good idea to take those cuttings a bit earlier on to ensure the success of the people who receive the cuttings from you.
True.
So the Seed and Plant Exchange is coming up Sunday, March 13th, and right now we're adding people to the event in terms of people having booths, educational booths, and even some product sales. So to be in touch with that, please visit our website, ribg.org, and visit the Seed and Plant page on there, and you'll find a link for further information. And also, if you want to become part of the team, and it seems we're getting new members of the team every few days, we get another person added to the team, and this is going to be the greatest team effort yet. So thanks everybody who signed up already, and really looking forward to just a smashing success and great celebration there at the Seed Exchange coming up. So wanted to mention too that while we're grateful so much for KKCR providing us this opportunity to provide this forum for practical hands-on advice and maybe even some esoteric advice about growing plants or living sustainably through agriculture and cultivation of the land, that there's lots of other great programs here on KKCR, and one of the really strong parts for our station are the public affairs shows where folks get a chance to call in and view their opinions. However, it's not just that. That isn't the only aspect of those shows. The programmers also do a lot of preparation and forethought, scheduling guests, and bringing up key topics that could be discussed. And I wanted to give a special thanks and aloha to Felicia, whose show is every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. Her, along with Marshall, present Kauai Soapbox Live, and it is a tremendous forum for many topics, and the fact that Felicia is all about resilient community building on Kauai and recognizes first, second, and third hand the importance of sustainable agriculture. She very often has a focus on agricultural issues that perhaps lean more towards the policy end of things as opposed to the practical end of things that we do here. And it's such a nice compliment. Yesterday's show in particular was focused strongly on agriculture, and our friend Christopher Schroeder was on as a guest, and he's doing some great small-scale agriculture, demonstrating how it can be done on the home scale level, the hobby farming level, and be a really nice compliment to people's way of making their ends meet and providing locally grown food for the community. And what do you think, Tammy?
Yeah, it's so important to especially get heads up about policies that are going to affect how we do things. And I think a lot of small-time farmers and producers are so busy that it's really important to have somebody like Felicia who can be the go-between and say, heads up, this is going to affect how you do business. And I think also with the food safety and all those kind of issues, the other meetings that happen that help us keep us informed. I know the monthly farmers union I go to, and I get lots of heads up and information about that. How are we going to deal with this coming up, or who do we need to talk to? And if you're a farmer and you get advice to call either a representative or, you know, a local elected official, just make that call, because it really makes a difference. I notice in politics when they hear from someone who's actually going to be affected.
And I really appreciate Felicia's assertive way of asking people, oh, well, have you contacted your representative on that issue? And the answer for so many of us is, oh, no, maybe we hadn't considered it, or we do consider it's too much work. But it really is worthwhile. And just again, to sum up, thank you, Felicia, so much. Marshall as well. Felicia especially makes such an effort to go to so many of these public hearings and committee meetings, and I'm hearing loud and clear from her that we as a community are not showing up enough. We're not turning out in the kind of numbers for the kind of issues that is obvious we all care about. So I'm hoping to make a renewed effort and make some time in my schedule for showing up for those things.
We should do more carpooling too, because I know I actually was going to try and hitch a ride with her to one meeting, but she was going to three meetings that night. So we need a little bit more carpooling to get to these meetings.
Indeed. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. This is your host, Paul, and I'm joined by Tammy Davis here in the studio. We're with you until 1 o'clock. We're here to talk about our passion for agriculture and farming and growing. And Tammy is so passionate about mushrooms that she is bringing a workshop in partnership with Regenerations to Kauai this weekend.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I've loved learning about mushrooms for, 20 years or more, and I just got fascinated by them kind of on my own. And then just went to the people that I saw that were collecting and finding them. One of my big mentorships was going to this Telluride Mushroom Festival. Every year for 16 years, I brought a volunteer crew and worked the door so that I could sit in and listen to these experts and really knowledgeable, scientifically minded, pretty amazing people talk about lots of different aspects of fungi as well as other ethnobotanical treasures in the world. And they were talking about things before they were ever published or popular that was really hard to find as a college student. You couldn't find any information on some of these entheogens, things that were, used shamanically by other cultures for so many thousands of years. And it was sort of blacked out in our culture. And I was so appreciative of hearing like responsible adults with real jobs talking about these things that I could. So I was fascinated. And then also we got to go out on forays. And so we would go into the mountains in Telluride. And it's always in August. If you're ever thinking about going to the mainland and you want to go on an amazing, magical journey, Telluride, Colorado is an incredible town at 9,000 feet, and it's like being in the middle of the Alps, and then in the fall, there's usually like a big boom of mushrooms, and they get bigger than anywhere else I've seen them because it's dry for part of the year, and then when the rains come, it just explodes. So this, some of these people, Paul Stamets, Andrew Weil, Gary Linkoff, they've all written, many books about these things. And they're guest speakers. And now there's like a whole nother generation of experts who've been coming and talking and sharing their mana'o. You can just really learn a lot about so many things at the Mount Telluride Mushroom Festival. There's also a parade where people dress up like mushrooms and parade down Main Street in the middle of Saturday. It's hilarious. Yeah.
And how many people are turning out for that these days, do you imagine?
You know, I don't know lately. I went for, like I said, those many years, and now I'm so far away. But we used to have a pretty intimate crowd. It was like 200 to 400 people. So you got to know everybody. You really got to go on a hike with Gary Linkoff, who's the, author of the Audubon Field Guide. He gives tours in New York of like Central Park, and he's just really, a longtime expert on taxonomy. And he'd give a slideshow as well as go out in the woods, and you could follow him around and what's this, what's this? And to have some really face time with those kind of people is invaluable when you're out in the woods, because there's so many questions that come up when you actually find a mushroom that you can't learn from a book. You can't really learn it on your own. You have to be with somebody who knows more.
And that's a perfect segue into people's opportunity this weekend, or rather this Sunday to be specific, to join in on the mushroom cultivation workshop with you, imparting your knowledge and your passion. And this is happening at the Kauai Food Forest up on the North Shore in Kalihiwai. And so what will people expect to experience there?
Well, I'm going to show a slideshow that has a lot of my previous projects, things that I've tried and learned from, things that I've succeeded at, things that have failed, just really give people a broad spectrum of what I've done. I've done a lot of like do-it-yourself. I'm not a commercial producer. I actually helped somebody start a commercial production lab, but just by telling them what I knew, and then they ran with it. I have a lot of ideas of what should be able to work for a regular person with some farming experience, and you could just learn as you go how to keep the mycelium running, which is the name of Paul's book. Paul Stamets wrote this book called Mycelium Running, which was, it's not his first book. He wrote a lot of cultivation books, but this one was the one for outdoor cultivation, like landscapers and permaculturists could really make use of this. And so I explain a lot of techniques from that book, and just looking at what is the role of fungi in the environment in general, and really getting to know it, because once you learn about them, you're going to see them everywhere, and you're going to see the incredible role that they play in your world that you were just, oblivious to before. Mm. So both the pictures and the botanical like explanation and their life cycle and their role will be kind of featured in the slideshow. And then, really like, what are the ideas for this island? What have I learned on this island that's going to work? And what are we going to try together as a community? The most important part for me is to get more people trying things, because that's how we're going to learn, is I can't do it all. And, everybody that I've started teaching, they can really develop their own special niche in how we spread this mycelium. Mm-hmm. Because from what I can see, it's only beneficial to really get these particular types of mushrooms out there in the environment. And, you know, besides cleaning up waterways and being able to bioremediate some of the pesticides in the soil and any of the diesel and oil spills or any place where there's contamination, you know, these are pretty crucial topics for the island. And even though we're still in the experimental beginning phase, we can all be doing something about it.
Yes. And we are in that experimental phase in part because although they have such a tremendous role in the environment, the combined knowledge of mushrooms is so much smaller than it is for the flowering plants, even though the flowering plants would never exist without the mushrooms. But it's really shocking to kind of grasp how far behind we are all the way, as far as popular knowledge, but also the scientific research on mushrooms.
So much can be done. And anyone who's in college, I mean, anyone who's interested, there's so many research projects that could be done that are needed, really needed. And we have a culture that's been what they call mycophobic. Our European culture has roots in, like, the Russian culture has a very mycophilic. They love mushrooms in that culture. And there's other little pockets of peoples who've always been really loving of mushrooms and always teach their kids, and they always include it. And we have, even though we have these cute little, you know, red and white polka dot mushrooms on all of our dish towels, most people have no idea really where they are, how they grow, and where to find them. And if their parents see a kid touching a mushroom, they're like, don't touch that, it's poisonous. And kids will kick them over a lot. I notice on trails, they'll just kick at them. And they don't really get it, you know, what it is. And luckily, it doesn't hurt them. I mean, luckily, they spread no matter if you kick them or not.
It may hurt their feelings.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so the other aspect of the workshop is we're going to start to inoculate the wood chip piles that you've been getting over there in the zone where there's Albizia chips. And we thought that's kind of what inspired the workshop idea, is like, hey, let's just get this stuff inoculated and see how well they can hold the different types of strains that we have access to. And what can we do to spread this stuff and inoculate the piles while the wood's fresh? That's important. And then, you know, and then share some mycelium with folks who can then try different experiments and then report back, like, what worked. So we'll all be able to learn how to clone fresh mushroom specimens and then be able to grow them out on cardboard and take that with you and start to inoculate different various substrates that we'll recommend what will work, you know, and how to treat the substrate. We'll have some hands-on activities that will help everybody get, like, a little feel for what you need to do to give the mushrooms a head start.
Mm. Awesome. And I love that it's not just a this workshop is not something that you just experience on your own, but it's an opportunity to create that working group or that affinity group that is excited and wants to see the shared results that people are having. So no doubt there'll be new friends, old friends, and a new reason to be linking our efforts and sharing this enjoyable process. So that's really super cool. So if I understand, the cultivation that we'll be doing will be for ultimately growing these mushrooms out in an outdoor setting as opposed to an indoor, which is often used in a commercial setting. Is that correct?
Yeah, I usually tend to focus on things that can be done without a lot of sterilization and or lab equipment and or clean rooms and things that are, you know, expensive and harder to maintain. So, you know, we'll be doing things that, but that means you have to get good at keeping the mycelium running. And that's kind of that's going to be our theme. It's how do we keep it running, keep it fed, keep it clean, keep it moving, and keep it with new fresh food sources. So, that'll be the trick. And it's all because, you know, you're in an outdoor environment where the mushrooms are, having to learn how to deal with whatever is in your particular environment, molds, other fungi, whatever the native, you know, mycological landscape is. Anything that comes out of a laboratory in a sterile bag is going to have a little time to get used to what its environment is. And it does actually produce enzymes specific to its environment in order to better survive. So it needs a little chance to get to know its environment, start producing the right enzymes so that it can be successful in its new home. And we do have a bag of spawn that came from Fungi Perfecti over on the mainland. And it's been, you know, it's kind of my last bag I have left. So we're definitely this precious, you know, thing. We want to spread it into as many hands as can possibly keep it going. Because you never know, like, just like with seed, you know, when you're saving seed, you want to make sure you have, you know, various people tending the different species so that you don't lose one.
Exactly. And just for people who are waiting patiently to know when this workshop's happening, Sunday, Sunday, February 7th, this coming Sunday, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Kauai Food Forest. For more information and to register, visit ribg.org.
And you can call me if you have any questions about what we're doing or not doing, or if you just want to know more so you can get excited about coming. You can call me at 541-510-9658. I'm happy to help out. I actually got a phone call already based on a flyer that was shared with somebody on the Big Island, and they really wanted to have me help identify a mushroom.
Well, that's great, and maybe they'd be lucky enough that you'd bring the workshop to them as well.
Yeah.
So as far as cultivation of mushrooms, and we're talking on and off again about this new food safety management program, food management safety program, through this new federal regulatory procedure. Do you have any idea whether the outdoor cultivation of mushrooms is going to be acceptable for commercial sale?
I really don't know about the production. I think the guys up in Lavai would know kind of what the rules are, how that applies to them, because all mushrooms should be eaten cooked, by the way. So even though some people eat them raw and some people have been eating them in salads for years, just sliced white button mushrooms, all the experts recommend that you cook them before you eat them. And I think that's really good advice.
Even the entheogenic mushrooms.
Even though, because, you know, if you pick them out in the field, they're growing on cow dung.
Right. Cool. Well, that'll be great fun. And Tammy brings lots of experience to Kauai, and one of your most recent experiences was leading the internship program at the Resonance Project Foundation here in the North Shore area, and you ran that program for 3.5 years, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a big part of it was bringing in interns and that educational component, and I certainly, as an observer, thought you did a really good job of putting the word out. Of course, we were very grateful that you continued to send your interns over to the Food Forest to be volunteers. And it was just really great to meet that group of people as they came through and just had a sense that they were having a rich experience. One, they'd come to Kauai, how amazing, but that they were part of something that really resonated with them, no pun intended. And so for all those people out there who aspire to have either internship programs of themselves or to perhaps look at ways in which the farmer help that they get, the work trade help that they're having on their farm is really meeting the needs of the people who are coming, screening new applicants. There's so many things to consider, and I just thought this was a great opportunity with you, with your experience, to share some recommendations for us.
Yeah, I've led three different programs. One was in Oregon, and we had a live-in community, like a community of 25 people, and then somebody would come and join and start gardening with us. Mm-hmm. We also had some programs where they would pay a certain amount per month, and they would actually get specific classes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes it's good to make a distinction. Is this going to be a volunteer, learn-as-you-go, work trader, you know, farm opportunity, or is this going to be a semi-educational where there's actually specific time set aside to tell people what you're doing and what's going on and why you do it? Or is it a full-on educational program in which you know, rightfully would need to charge some money because it takes time to explain people what you're doing? And I think that, you know, a lot of farmers really just are so amazing at what they do, and just standing near them and weeding and like learning as they're in the process of doing what they're doing without even them saying anything, you learn a lot if you just pay attention. If you're the kind of person that needs to be told everything, you're not going to learn as much. You're just like, well, I'm just sitting here weeding, you know. But if you're paying attention and you really want to learn, even if you're just straight up, you know, weeding for 20 hours a week, if you are watching, you're going to see what these master farmers are up to. And so I think there's a different, you know, there's different expectations people would have, and you want to make sure that you're advertising, you know, according to what you have time to do as far as education. But one of the things that I noticed is that even just explaining what seems really obvious to you to a new person that shows up is like a major education for them. And even when I came over with a lot of experience, and I actually hung out at One Song Farm and just basically prepped beds for 12 hours a week for months, I'd learned so much, and I already had a lot of knowledge and experience, but just because I got that it was a new place, a new environment, a new technique, or a masterful application of techniques that I had heard about. And so, you know, that was incredible, and an incredible experience. So, you know, I think, again, trying to match up what people are ready to receive and what you're at, you know, what you're advertising for is important. I always screen my applicants with a pretty longer questionnaire than most farms would, because I think it's important how they relate to each other. Do they have a personal practice that keeps them centered and focused? Are they going to just get scattered? Are they just here to be on vacation, or they really want to learn about farming? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do to show up? Like, what are they going to show on their end, you know, besides just the required hours, that they're really maybe asking for feedback? Like, I like to have them state their goals. Three things they want to learn while they're here, you know, three things that they'd like to experience or get good at. And then at the end, I ask for feedback and say, like, well, what did you learn that was new? Or what did you, how can you apply what you did? So those are kind of ways to beef up some of these situations where, you know, it's more casual. If you really want people to learn, or you want to actually get more active learners, mm-hmm. then those are ways that you can, they see that that's more serious. Like, they look at that. Yeah. Right.
So I've heard a lot of opinions about the WOOFER program, the mm-hmm. Willing Workers on Organic Farms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about it. Is there any sort of a preparatory process that the applicants even go through? Is there sort of a code of principles if you sign up as a WOOFER that you're already sensing that you're there to learn, or is it really always on the farmers side of things to lay out all the details?
In my experience, it's pretty wide open. As long as somebody joins the site, they can start applying. Mm. You have to look at what they say about themselves. I think what would be more useful if more people said which farms they went to and more farms tracked, you know, who was really worthy of recommendation or not. That would be more helpful. I always check references, because some people will list something as a reference, but they actually were asked to leave. And so if you don't check,
right.
just because they said they were at my farm, make sure you call me.
Right, exactly.
And so I think that's important. And just integrity, you know, like who's, and that really isn't really, I wouldn't say that just because somebody applied to the WOOFING site that they have demonstrated that. Some people can just, you know, pay to sign up, and then they have access to all these farm listings. And you just really have to look at what they say about themselves. And then I always have a form that I send back to them before I really even talk to them, because I have more specific questions. And then I look at what they say, and then I start talking to them, and then I check their references.
Okay. And what about the opportunity for the workers themselves, sort of somewhere along their projected stay, to actually encourage them to, or give them that opportunity to give a more formal feedback of how it's going for them? Because it seems like it's human nature that we suppress things, mm-hmm. and they fester, and we talk to everyone but the person who we have an issue with about the problem. And so it seems like having that sort of intermediary period where feedback is needed.
I've mostly been a part of educational programs, so we're not on a deadline to produce. You know, we are producing as much as we can for both the community, for the, you know, the people themselves, to grow as much food as we can for them. But I think at some of the farm situations I've seen here, the farmers are really, really working all the time and super busy. But I think one thing that could be helpful is having these check-ins, you know, having opportunities for feedback. Even if you hear the same feedback year after year after year, the fact that they had a chance to say their piece makes them feel more heard, and then they're more likely to stick around and support, you know, because they got to hear whatever their, you know, concerns have been. So I know that some of the farms now have regular check-ins, and I think, you know, social dynamics is an important aspect for living together and working together. So there needs to be some forum. I like to promote nonviolent communication and give people education about ways that they can interact that would be more beneficial potentially. And so then they start, you know, trying to structure their feedback in a way that gives them more opportunity to take responsibility for their response, but also just, you know, show what's happening for them and be transparent about how it's affecting them. So, you know, some people work extremely hard and don't ever complain. And then some people, you notice, like, they don't really want to work very hard, and they're really just there to get as much as they can and not do anything. Mm-hmm. And so the farmer has to also show their vulnerability, like, you know, this doesn't work for me. Like, I'm working really hard all the time, and when you ask me 20 questions and then you don't actually do your labor, you know, I have to be paid as a teacher in order to be that in that role. rather than be, you know, running a farm. So I just know that there's, you know, give and take in that relationship. And the apprenticeship, I think it's an apprenticeship model. You know, there's labor, work, trade, there's learning programs, and then there's this apprenticeship model. And that's kind of, I think, what the highest, I mean, if you look at all the different ways that we can learn from someone, working alongside somebody who's actually doing this as their business, you got to be careful, like, how much you demand from them. And then you also need to really support what they're doing.
Right. And the apprenticeship model, traditionally at least, is more a one-on-one kind of situation as opposed to apprenticing a number of people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, finding that balance where it's not, you haven't created more work for yourself by having the help. And then also for farmers who provide room and board for their workers, it seems like that would be a great area for feedback from. It seems that oftentimes the feedback that we get from people who've worked in these situations is that hasn't been addressed as well. Like, oh, a hot shower would be nice at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, what are the minimum kind of standards? And could there be at least a... I mean, I think we're getting there because people get reputations and then they don't want to go to that farm. And that is why the wolfing site does have some feedback opportunities. There are ways that you can say, you know, I stayed here and what did you think about it? You can give reviews, and maybe if we utilize that a little bit better without trying to, like, you know, shut down the whole operation, just say, like, well, you know, this farm could use a little bit more attention on the water supply or, you know, whatever.
Well, it's exciting that we have a group, an action group here working toward an agritourism bill for Kauai County, thanks to the good people at the Kapa'a Business Association for really forwarding that for us. And it would be interesting to consider a model where once, if it was possible to have stays on the farm, which is being conducted on Maui and the Big Island, they've enacted their agritourism bills or legislation preceding Kauai's, that somehow the, just considering how that integration of the interns or the, you know, the workers integrated, and I'm sorry, I'm missing that word you just used, the apprentices, the farm apprentices integrating with the people staying for more of a experiential short-term visit and actually start boosting them up as beginning teachers. Because, yeah, one day in the field, and if you paid attention, you could be you could at least pass that on.
Yeah, I think it's really important to just share what you're learning as you're learning it. You don't have to wait till you're an expert. Just say, I noticed this, I noticed that, and that really saves the expert farmer. Like, I know you get asked a zillion questions, but the next person who's been working with you for however many years could easily answer that question if they were put on the spot.
Right.
And so I think
which
that's
I love
helpful.
To do to people.
I've seen you
say,
do that.
Well, what do you think? So that works good. So thank you for that. And you are exploring new horizons yourself, Tammy, right now. And so I don't know if you want to give out an invitation to the world through KKCR about what it is that, what's your ideal scenario? You have so many gifts and talents to share.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really visioning into where can I have access to land that things could be growing that I would be eating and sharing. I'm really excited about having a tea house. And so I love sharing herbal, and we'd also like to do these little pu'er tea ceremonies, which are more of an artisanal tea. And then I think it would be really great to have a place where I can do massage treatments and have some of the herbal medicinal plants that are used a lot to help people with their healing path, all growing around the tea house and using it as a massage studio. I have an incredible library that I would love to be able to share, so I would have like shelves of books and be able to have maybe like a book club meeting or somewhere where we kind of get together and have a small. So, you know, and I'm wide open as far as, I don't know exactly where and how I'll be putting my energies towards, but I'm looking for what's next. So entertaining possibilities and putting out their requests. And yeah.
Great. And what's your number again?
It's 541-510-9658.
Yeah. And you put together a beautiful brochure. You emailed me about a week ago.
Yeah, I have a PDF I could share with what kind of my vision is.
Yep, lots of beautiful photographs of Tammy's projects, what she's accomplished, and the order that she brings to natural spaces, the beauty, the art. So I wish, like I do so many times when I get to collaborate with friends with amazing talents, that we could scoop you up for regenerations, but I guess my next priority is just making sure you stay on the Garden Island so we can continue to collaborate and enjoy your contributions. So
thank you.
Thank you for that. And I'm going to let you know that this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here each and every Wednesday from noon to 1, and you can listen to previous recordings of the show by visiting kkcr.org. Click the audio archive link at the top of the page, and you'll find archives of our show as well as the other public affairs shows, including the Kauai Soapbox Live that we talked about earlier with Felicia and Marshall, and then Out of the Box, which happens on Thursdays, Jonathan Jay, Jimmy Trujillo. I think they have some other collaborators coming on and off that show as well. Those guys do such a super job. So we're really trying to serve you here on Kauai. It's exciting. We're having some interesting modifications of the studio that we're sitting in right now, which is great. But you do have to rip up the carpet and change it after a number of years. And I've been here at the station not as long nearly as some, but long enough to see the changes that have happened from sort of that more than cosmetic level, but those changes that you see at the studio. And what it basically amounts to is old, tired, worn-out equipment or part of the facility is replaced. And, of course, the only way we do that is through donations to the station. And we have a special opportunity for you right now to declare your love on KKCR with Valentine's Day coming up soon. Donate $10 or more to KKCR by Friday, February 12th, and hear your declaration of love announced on KKCR on every live show from 7 a.m. to midnight on Valentine's Day, Sunday, February 14th. And I know there's more information at kkcr.org. So I think this is a really fun sort of play space for the community, and I'm sure looking forward to hearing the declarations of love to so many things on KKCR.
Doesn't just have to be people.
It's going to be super fun, yeah. I doubt that it will be only restricted to human love, but there'll be some of that too. So, again, declare your love on KKCR and every day by visiting kkcr.org, or you can call the station at 826-7774. And stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy coming up at 1 o'clock. But for now, we're here still talking about our love for tending the land, serving the interests of this human experiment on this planet, which gets more and more interesting as time goes on, it seems. But we're going to get down to the basics right now in our Secrets of the Soil Builders. We're going to talk about mulching strategies and starting off with just that idea of what is mulch, why do we use it? Well, we've talked a couple of weeks ago with Eileen about the concept of lasagna gardening, and certainly a large component of that is the mulch that it provides, as well as sort of an on-site compost pile. But mulch has extraordinarily many benefits, and we're to begin our laundry list of great things. I'm going to turn to Tammy for some of the things that might just pop into her head.
Let's see.
Why do we use mulch?
Why do we use mulch? Well, I found it incredible as far as being able to suppress weeds. And so you have a thick layer of something on top, so it takes a little bit longer for those things to sprout. In a hot, dry area, it really preserves moisture underneath. And so, you know, you don't have to water as often. You can keep things from getting baked at their roots. And in some cases, it actually sheds water. So, you know, depending on how you layer it, and if you put a bunch of cardboard and wood chips on top, you might actually not get very much water underneath for a while. So it should be moist before you put that down.
Yes. Yes. In fact, the technique of pulling mulch away from a plant if heavy rains are expected, if it needs the rain, actually is recommended, and then returning it after that time. It turns out that most of the roots of plants, from a very general description of plants, are in the first 6 inches of soil. The nutrient-feeding roots of plants, and certainly with our herbaceous plants, they can be quite a bit more shallow than that. So the effect of what's happening on the surface level is crucial. And like you said, when we have extremities of environment playing themselves out on the surface level, like dryness, heat, these are things to be moderated, and mulch does a beautiful job of that. It also, of course, boosts the, I should back up and say we're talking about organic mulch, because we can mulch with all sorts of things. Anything you might imagine could be used in mulch if it was laid down thickly enough. But we recognize organic mulches that represent a contribution of organic matter to the soil are very important, in that they are feeding our microorganisms and our macroorganisms that are beneficial, the waste products of which are beneficial to plant growth, whether they be exudates or the poop from the millipedes or whatever it may be. So putting that on is also a really great idea. It also improves the soil structure and porosity of the soil as the worms make their way, or maybe even the dung beetles are making their way, bringing that organic matter down into the soil in small amounts that's already partially pre-composted. It is beneficial to the soil. Whereas we want to make sure that we're never turning fresh wood chips or mulch into the soil, because that leads to all kinds of problems.
That's the trick, is I think trying to keep your mulch intact on the surface is important. And I notice with a lot of new gardeners, they get excited about mulch, but then they go to plant something and they just trample it all in and dig it in and then plant a plant right in the middle, and there's all these wood chips mixed in. And I always try to tell my volunteers and new people gardening, always just scrape aside all the surface mulch, then do your digging and planting, and then put it all back and keep it on the top. And the idea is that if too much carbon gets mixed into the topsoil, then you're robbing nitrogen from the environment while it's breaking down. One of the good things is that the fungi are what's breaking down the carbonaceous material. And then once you have the fungi have done their job, then you've got this incredible nutrient-rich, kind of composted carbon material. So that's really helpful.
Yes. And depending on whether or not we are mulching trees or our garden beds, we might make some very different choices about what kind of material we use as well.
I have some exciting candidates.
Great, please.
Besides all the wood chipping that's happening, we know there's the wood chip piles, everybody's trying to get those. But what we were trying to do, because straw comes from very far away here, I've seen the same bales that I paid maybe $4 to $5 a bale for in California show up at the store here for a $30-something dollars. And I just, since I've been on the island, I've refused to buy a straw bale. So what I did is I've grown as much vetiver and lemongrass as I could. And I literally started with 3 little starts from, One Song Farm when I left. And I multiplied them out just so many times and shared them with people, and continue to create hedges out of vetiver and lemongrass. The lemongrass degrades faster, but it smells really good. And the vetiver is a little more wiry and lasts longer, and it's a little easier to harvest because it doesn't have as many of the scratchy hairs. But you do want to wear long sleeves. And once you get your hedgerow grown out, then you can just trim it pretty much 3 inches above ground level, straight across. Just cut the whole, mow the whole thing down, and use that to mulch your garden beds. And then it'll just grow right back. And you can do that over and over. And you want to have enough so you can rotate.
And it does help to fertilize them somewhat after you do the cutting, yes?
Yeah, and then that'll get a vigorous regrowth.
Right.
And you want to, just anything, rotate where you hit. You want to cut these down, mulch that part of your garden, and then let that grow back. Meanwhile, you have another patch. So you could really never have enough of these hedgerows. And then they also suppress weeds underneath where they're growing. They create a nice little area that's like a barrier between maybe a grassy area and another zone, so right on the edge of a bed.
In areas which I have let guinea grass, which is a very large statured invasive grass that's difficult to dig out once it gets its established, it seems to love to sort of sneak its way in at the root of especially the vetiver, but also the lemongrass. And so if I'm not on it, then it's kind
keep an eye on your
breath. It's hopelessly tangled in between and that sort of thing. So yeah.
And that's a good time to just dig that whole thing up and then replant one little, you know, one little one in that hole, right. Get the other thing out, and then you can make 20 more potted, you know, plants out of that one clump. Mm. I mean, one clump can multiply out 20 to 50 plants.
Now, it sounds like you have so much of this vetiver, Tammy, that you might be bringing some to the Seed and Plant Exchange coming up in March.
I wish I had access to it anymore.
Oh! Well, if you want to come by the food forest and help dig...
we can make some.
We can make some, which would be super great. So I've been thinking more and more about trees myself rather than the garden, which I'm missing. But sometimes our energies go in more... specific directions, and so I have been thinking a lot about trees and thankfully having sufficient mulch to lay down, and I've seen that it is a recommendation that if fresh material is used to actually, I actually read, mix high nitrogen fertilizer in with the mulch. Now that's didn't seem practical to me, and the fact that I'm also using neat meal, which is really gross when it gets wet. Mm-hmm. Instead, I've just been laying a layer of it down on top of the soil after I've weeded, and then I throw the chips on top of that, which hopefully will keep the dogs from digging so easily into it or having to deal with that.
That seems like a good strategy.
I'm not sure if it's going to work, but
we'll
that's
see.
What I did.
That's great. We get to all test it out, right?
I also found some good recommendations from CTAR, the College of Tropical Agriculture, and thanks to Ginny Mead and David Hensley for this publication on mulch. Here's their recommendations for mulching around trees. Make a circle around the base of the tree. Clear all plants from this circle. A minimum 3-foot radius of mulch is recommended around all trees up to 3 inches in trunk diameter planted in lawn areas. Increase the mulch radius by 1 foot for each inch of trunk diameter up to 12 inches. Be practical, however. Any size of mulched area aids growth and improves the appearance of the landscape. If you can only incorporate a 4-foot mulched area, that will be fine. It is not necessary to extend the radius all the way to the tree's drip line, which can cover an extensive area. A 12-foot mulch radius, or 24 feet in diameter, which is pretty big, is sufficient for trees of any size, although from the tree's point of view, the mulched area can never be too large. Mm. And then recommendation of replenishing after 6 to 9 months. Recommendations also on the thickness of mulch to spread. 3 to 4 inches was recommended as well by CTAR, and they gave us the calculation that 1 cubic yard of mulch covers 8 square feet at a 4-inch depth.
Okay.
So that might be helpful if you want to access that information as well. You can do what I did and just go to your internet search engine, type in CTAR, C-T-A-H-R, and mulch, and you'll get all kinds of good recommendations there. But I'm seeing that play out in the food forest, too, that this beautiful, thick mulch job that I did 6 months ago is almost gone.
Yeah.
Where does it go?
It goes fast here. Hopefully it goes into really good soil.
And the mushrooms are definitely playing a part, are they not?
Yeah. Awesome. And then what about a living mulch?
Ooh, living mulch. Living mulch would be the concept of looking at all of those beneficial things that we talked about and then trying to replicate them in a mulch that does not have to be applied every 6 to 9 months, but that we still get the weed suppression, we get the moderation of soil temperature, we get the increased porosity through, in this case, probably an active root zone that's the right choice because it's not competing with the tree, it's benefiting the tree. And there are various selections, but I know you have a really popular one in mind.
Mm-hmm. I just saw a really great example of something I've tried, and I think it's great, which is the perennial peanut. And we do see that used in landscaping on the island. It's a low-growing, it looks like clover leaf, you know, legume, typically, with little yellow flowers, and it's low-growing. It doesn't tend to climb up, up, up. So that's why it's a good use. It stays relatively low. If it hits a wall or a trunk or something, it might go up a few inches, but it's not going to then climb up and strangle your plant. And so Yeah, so I've used that extensively in areas that I wanted to have to, I didn't want to have to keep weeding it. And around the base of trees, you know, it's a nitrogen fixer. It makes a nice thick woven mat with lots of stems going along the ground. And it, you can plant into it. So once you have a nice thick fat layer of, this perennial peanut, you can just open it up and stick something in the ground in between it. But I saw over at Dave Wild's farm, I was just visiting with him yesterday and he was showing me, he's got a lot of his permaculture kind of tree forest, food forest zone really thickly covered in perennial peanut. And his strategy was really great and seemed like it worked great, is that he plants, when he first gets plugs or any kind of cuttings, he plants them kind of thickly in a line, and then they're going to start growing to their immediate next zone. And so he'll clear the weeds just in their next, the next available zone that they can grow into, just enough so that they can cover that. And then you do the next, you know, the leading edge, he called it. And so you just keep clearing the leading edge, and then they march over there and clearing the leading edge. Versus if you spread all those plugs out a little bit too, you know, like thinly, you'd end up weeding the whole patch over and over until
and
they
where,
grow in.
And where are they, right? You're sort of bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, and it's a lot harder to get your coverage. And so start
so
really thick and then just keep clearing the leading edge, he said. And so I was really thankful for Dave Wild for giving us that tip.
And do you think it's important to root them in the nursery setting before you place them out, or just putting cuttings right into the
soil?
Depends
on how much moisture and how much. I like to just soak them in a bucket of water for like a you know, even just a week, and you'll start getting little rootlets, and then that, putting that in the ground and tamping it down, or like, you know, keeping, make sure it just stays covered or so it doesn't dry out.
Right. Cool. Well, great suggestions there. I'm looking forward to experimenting more with perennial peanut and various kinds of mulch, and looking forward to inoculating mulch with you this weekend at the mushroom cultivation workshop up at the Kauai Food Forest. We're putting together a steaming chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Right after the show, Tammy and I are going to receive some assistance from your buddy Lars.
Yeah, thank you,
and,
Lars.
And we're going to be sterilizing some of those fresh Albizia wood chips to inoculate with bunker spawn of the Stropharia
rugosa annulata.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And so if you'd like to join us in this really fun, hands-on, informative session on mushroom cultivation, then you would be wise to have a look at the RIBG.org website. You'll see a big, if you scroll down, you'll see a flyer for the workshop. If you click that said flyer, you will be led to the registration page. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. It is Super Bowl Sunday, but out of deference to Super Bowl fans, we've scheduled it so that you could both grow shrooms and watch the game. So there's an opportunity for you. Just time for a few announcements coming up here in the agricultural world on Kauai. We want to let you know that this month, Kauai Nursery and Landscaping is offering a free workshop. It's actually not until the 27th of February from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Wow, that's a concise program. Kauai Invasive Species Committee has a new program called Grow Pono, helping gardeners, nurseries, and landscapers make pono planting decisions. I know they have an accompanying website as well, so that'll be really fun. I know that Malama Kauai is getting set to host their Earth Day Rising. It'll be the 6th annual. It's going to happen at the Malama Kauai Community Farm, home of the Kauai Food Forest as well. And this is going to be April 24th, 2016, and you can get more information about that on the Malama Kauai website. And we also want to let you know that Bino Costello offers his free botanical garden tour at Kauai Mini Golf each and every Friday morning at 9:30 a.m. Did you do that yet, Tammy?
I love that. I sent all my new people that come to the island, I send them to Bino.
You got
to
go. It's that good, people. So check it out. And without further ado, we're going to try the next CD machine and see if I can get some music rolling for you. But Tammy, any final thoughts? I was just going to say
I've been on Bino's tour 3 different times as well. Every time somebody comes, and also I just jump in and go. And he's also doing those propagation opportunities to jump in and learn a little bit from him.
Yeah.
Once a month where you can go to the Ninoho. I imagine there's going to be one in February since he's done it the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice. You can go and help them spread the landscaping plants they're going to be using for the next expansion for this amazing project in the back with the amphitheater. And also just learn about cultivation of native plants.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bino. Thanks to Ninoho Community Park, which is hosting the next Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange as well. And tune in again next week when I'll be doing a field tour to Ueli's aquaculture project or aquaponics program. So we'll be hearing bubbling, fishy sounds on the show next week. And tune in, and we'll have a good time again with you. And thanks so much for tuning into In the Garden on the Farm. I love you guys so much. Stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy. And you're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. And thanks a lot, Tammy. It's great to be with you. Aloha.